Minisode 14 of Futures Radio Show, sponsored by CME Group, the world's leading and most diverse futures and options exchange. CME Group's markets help individuals and businesses around the world manage risk and seize opportunities. Learn more at futuresfundamentals.com.
Every day, traders and investors dive in to tackle the ever-changing markets to find opportunity. Futures Radio Show is your number one source for answers to the questions that all market participants want to ask. Veteran futures trader Anthony Crudele sits down with the most influential leaders and top traders in the industry. Now, here's your host, Anthony Crudele.
Hey everyone, before we get started today, I want to thank all of our sponsors. CME Group, Top Step Trader, and Trading Technologies. With TT, you could trade the global markets from virtually anywhere. They are the world's fastest commercially available futures trading platform. Create your account and try it now free at tryttnow.com. Without further ado, let's get Anne-Marie on the line. Anne-Marie, welcome back to the show.
Glad to be back.
That's great to speak with you. How's your summer going?
Really well. Really well. Enjoying it as much as I can. Time seems to fly, though. I tell you, it's going to be September before we know it.
I'm telling you, this year, to me, it seems like one of the fastest years I've ever had in my life.
Yeah, I think the older we get, that tends to increase exponentially, I believe. It really, I've had the years have been flying by, but maybe it's because I've been having so much fun trading.
Yeah, and you know, and getting to the markets, you know, this year, as fast as this year has gone by, I feel like it's been a pretty slow year for me trading-wise. I feel like I've been doing a lot more watching. So I want to get into some technicals with you today. I want to pick your brain, see what you're looking at. But before we get into technicals in any market, I want to talk about process. I mean, you and I are both big advocates of process. We've had you on the show before. You and I have had conversations before about process and its importance. It's what you're doing before you go and execute a trade. So talk to our audience and talk about what type of chart you're using, what kind of time frame are you trading in, and then what technical indicators you're using.
All right. Well, you know, I do believe process is important because that's the only thing that allows us to replicate things over time. It's like a baseball player that has a few pitches. You know, he's not going to change those how he winds up every single time because he's not going to get consistency. And so that really is the main reason for why we like to focus on process, of course. And so for me, I always start big picture because I'm looking for the spaces where the big moves occur. And every single morning, I will start looking at the weekly chart, even though I'm an intraday trader and people think that that's very odd, but it is certainly what I do. I start from the weekly events and I say, am I chattering around a level of support or resistance that a lot of price action seems to be moving to, you know? And if the answer is yes, then intraday, as I move more closely into the tighter time frames, I'll jump to that 4-hour chart and I'll say, all right, are the traders sitting in a way that will allow them to punch through? So, for instance, in the ES today, before the open, before this big move started early in the day, I looked at the weekly chart and I said, well, you know what? We are sitting up around that congestion zone near 24.28, 24.29, and that was support on the weekly chart for a long time. So if I see us creeping up over there, the tighter time frames are going to tell me if I have momentum that it's going to be able to press forward. And indeed, all of that was ramping up, and then the news came, and then, of course, it moved naturally in the flow of motion that momentum was already building towards. And so I always start in the big space because I think although I'm an intraday trader, if I look at the little spaces, the 5-minute, the 1-minute, those sorts of things, the noise distracts me. And I'm always looking for where is the real signal event? Where's the pivot that slips buying into power or selling into power? And it really starts looking at the weekly charts. And as far as those technical indicators, you know, I really like to look at support and resistance because, as you and I have talked about, before, price is the only thing that pays us. We get to buy low and sell high, or we sell to open high and buy low to close. And we have to make everything that we do around that price event. And so if we're looking at that price event and we see, hey, listen, there's a measure here, then the next thing I like to look at is momentum. And my favorite technical indicator is the stochastic momentum index. And I will look at that on the bigger time frames. I will look at a fast line that tells me where the motion is going. And on the very tight time frames, 30 minutes is about the tightest I will look at on the day. It gives me a shot at seeing where the clean action is going to be for a bigger breakout or a breakdown or a collapse or whatever.
Gotcha. So I want to go back to the weekly charts when you talk about support and resistance. Are you just basically taking horizontal lines, putting them on your chart, and putting them to lows and to highs to give you those support and resistance levels? Or is it something proprietary that you're using for support and resistance?
It's really simple stuff. It's a line, horizontal line I look at. For instance, if someone's listening right now and they say, hey, can I look at what she's looking at? I would take a look at the weekly ES chart that's composite, and you can draw a line right underneath 24, 27, 75, and you'll see weeks of candlestick motion, either closing there, opening there, testing low there, or testing through it. We literally have run through that one line for 7 weeks in a row, consistently. And when that happens, you know it's an area of importance. For me, resistance isn't always the high. It's where people begin to go, I probably ought not to buy a lot more over this line, instead of the very high that we see, which is 24.5150 right now. I will look at something that says, you know, seems like people started getting interested at selling right around 24.43 and a quarter. And so automatically when this chart started creeping up into that level, I said, okay, not going to buy any more there, probably a time to start taking profit. And then I start looking for the higher low. Is it going to hold 24.34? And again, I draw a horizontal line and I look at where we've opened, where we've closed, where we've tested, where we've rejected. And if they all come around that level, because there's not an exact area, right? Because so many of us are using different strategies and different systems and different algorithms, we're all going to try and squeeze those lines out. So there's no exact line. So we look at where everybody gets most interested. And I do that with a really simple horizontal line.
Oh, I love it. I like keeping things simple. And I like how you say how you're never going to get an exact support or resistance level. And I've always looked at, especially bigger picture numbers, as like mattresses. They're going to hit them and they're going to have a little give.
Exactly. That's a great analogy.
So I want you to take us through a recent trade that you've had, because I want to talk about how you go from a weekly looking at support or resistance eventually turn into a trade. So you have, you know, support at an area, and then you're using, you said, I think the 240-minute chart. How does it get to the point to where you then execute, determine your stop, and then determine a target? And then we'll work off the S&P.
Perfect. All right. So I like to trade the ES. So I will go, if you want to talk about a specific trade, I'll go back to that so I can reference it. But I always will start from the weekly event, and I'll notice the range. My favorite thing to do is to find where the excitement begins to build. So that's a bottoming process. And then where it starts tapering off, the topping process. And so I will look at those ranges. And so today is a perfect example of the setup that is beginning right here in the ES. At that high that I talked about, where I said, you know what, everybody seems to be tapering off at that 24.43 level. So when I have that level, I love the lines I can see on the weekly. I will go right to the 30-minute chart, and I will draw a line at that 24.43, and I will begin to look at the individual 30-minute candlesticks, and I'll start seeing the first time it gets very close to there, and then I start watching for the lower highs. The only way a chart is going to reverse is if it breaks the support level and fails to recapture the high, right? I mean, I don't want to sell when people are still interested in moving price higher. And so I know 2443 is about that level they're going to collapse on. And this morning they came into 2442.75. So my thought was, wow, I think they should come into 2443. But the next few 30-minute candlesticks broke the new layers of support, which were sitting down at around 2438, 2439. Because I'm looking at a 30-minute price action. And so I will watch for it, and I'll try to make sure that my candlesticks don't test higher. But as they come in, testing higher and testing lower, I will then try to catch a short with a limit order at about 2442. So that's been waiting for me. Right? It has not triggered yet. But what I do see myself doing, what I do see the chart doing, is testing these support levels and keeping the chart forced down. This way, I know I have a stop that's only about 2 or 3 points wide. And then I also know that my gains are likely to take me into something like the Globex high, which is about 2436.50, or if I'm very fortunate, it'll come into the next support zone at the initial balance high, which is 2434. So I legitimately am looking at 3 points of potential risk with about 6 to 7, maybe even 8 points of reward. And so that's how I'll stack it up. The big line in the sand tells me how much can I lose. That's going to be where I focus every single trading event. I'm never thinking about, wow, this is going to be a winner. I can move from here to here. I'm always thinking, if I get into this trade and the wheels come off the bus, where is the most damage I'm going to take? And so all of my trades are focused around those edges, which is why I like to pick the environments that show what a bottoming formation looks like. And a bottoming formation looks exactly the same every single time. It'll come down, it'll stop making lower lows. Then it'll bounce, come in, breach the relative resistance on that tighter time frame I'm looking at, and then it will pull back and give me a higher low. And that higher low tells me, all right, there's a cushion of buyers waiting for me there, and I can take that trade knowing where those cushions are. I can have my stop tight, and I can move into the body of the trade. I used to trade breakouts and breakdowns, but algorithms don't allow us to do that unless there is a tremendous motion moving it down, because what they're doing is gaming that edge, right? Good traders and traders that really want to take everything they can out of the market are going to game the edges of support, because you and I see them all together because we're using simple horizontal lines. And so if someone comes in and they say, hey, I see that they think this support area is this, I'm going to sell underneath that. Maybe I'm going to sell underneath that just a little bit. So they lose on a couple of contracts, force everything in, and then watch the price action catch fire. And then, you know, they come in with a big order, cost average down, and then move into wherever it is that they're going on a target space.
Now, you laid that out beautifully. Thank you for that explanation. Now I want to talk a little bit about NASDAQ. I know that you look at the weekly charts, and there's been a lot of talk on blogs amongst traders that the NASDAQ is breaking down. We have this big divergence. You and I have been watching it. We see it. S&P and Dow are diverging from the NASDAQ on a lot of days. What are you seeing right now on the NASDAQ weeklies? Let's talk the bigger picture stuff. Is there any indications of the NASDAQ possibly topping, or is there something that you're looking at in the NASDAQ that we should be keeping an eye on right now?
Well, you know, the thing about the NASDAQ is that right around April, it took off like a house of fire, and it expanded at a much higher rate than the rest of the markets. And so when the NASDAQ began to dip, I thought to myself, well, this is just a reversion to the mean, because what was it, like 17% or something up on the year? It was just some gigantic number. And it was much, much higher than the S&Ps. And so when it dipped the first time, I thought, maybe we'll have like a little bit of a reversion to the mean because we've got this massive acceleration here. But really what it's done is it sort of shook out where a lot of folks said, hey, I've got a lot of profit here. I'm going to take some of that profit off. And they have done exactly that. But they came into a really strong support zone. For me, again, I looked at the breakout levels and I thought, all right, where's the last time on the weekly chart that we really got buyers excited about holding? And that number was about 56.53. Now, we've had some wicks that were quite below that, particularly last week. But if you draw a line across that, you can see them holding that area to try to come back. Now, they are bouncing. We've had two very strong bounces the last 2 days. And so we're in a bit of a recovery zone. Whether the chart is breaking down is very hard to see from a weekly formation, because what it's showing us is just like what happens when I have a trend and I'm looking to take an intraday reversal off of that, it stops making new highs, it breaks my support zone, and then it comes back and fails to test or reach the old high, I know that's a region that I can start shorting. But as it comes into that support, what it's done is hold that support line in the end. It shook through it, passed down, but it's holding that area. So really, it's hard to say whether this chart is breaking down. What I think there was a bit of profit taking, but this last 100 points or so, which have occurred in 2 days, right? We've had about 110 points in 2 days of motion. That really is fairly strong. So unless we really top out here and then start shifting about, there's really nothing that says to me, hey, listen, the NASDAQ is breaking down. Obviously, it's taking a breath, but I just don't see the evidence of that right now. I can buy my support zones, and I know I'm making lower highs, so I better be careful hanging on as I get into my resistance. But I don't think there's a long-term short sitting here until we see some deeper shakeouts with another failure to retest. Because really, we could go all the way down to 54.49 and still not break the uptrend here. There's that much motion to the upside sitting in this chart.
Yeah, it needs time. I mean, that's obviously what you're saying. It needs time. We need to see a little bit more happening here. So let's move on and talk about crude. Now, today we had some EIA numbers, and just going beyond that, we had a pretty decent move in crude, not only today, but over the past week or so as well. It's been pretty volatile. Talk to us about what you're seeing there on the weekly charts.
Well, you know, on the weekly charts, it's really quite range-bound. It's moving between 43.50 or so all the way up to 46.60. And so many of the bodies of these candlesticks, we can look across 5 weeks of motion and see that we're caught in this space. Now, a lot of us tend to look at the chart falling all the way down and we go, oh, okay, well, the next stop must be 40. And for me, what I love to say all the time is, if you want to know whether this chart is ready to take a bounce, look to the left. And when you look to the left, if you can see a place where buyers all definitively said, you know what, once I hold here, I'm going to lift up, we're going to see that number is around 43.50. And so what we are doing is really trying to recover. Oddly, you know, there's a lot of news. I think oil traders are very emotional. And so there's a lot of news that moves the market because the oil trader tends to run with abandon. They're like gold traders, really. They're just a very interesting group of folks. And I, of course, trade oil, but I can see it being a more volatile instrument because it seems to have some kind of emotional connection because it's attached to physical wealth in other parts of the world. And so whether or not, you know, OPEC clamping down can push price up or how that works with all the exports we have from shale and whether Permian holds the market the way that it wants to or whatever, I think that's really sort of an after effect. It's really much more, hey, here's what the traders thought of this space, and here's where they're scrambling. And I think this chart is trying to bottom. But my gut says it's going to sit in this sideways patch until the weight of motion really moves forward. And I don't see it yet because it's been this downward draft. And if something's been moving at 70 miles an hour downward into the space, it cannot turn on a hairpin. It's got to have that cross current that helps reverse it. And in this space, we're sitting in that cross current. And you can see the cross current looking a little bit like it if you go all the way back to 2016 between August 29th and September the 19th. So it's almost a month there. It really does sit sideways, and these candlesticks retrace each other over and over and over again. I see resistance at the top. I see support at the bottom, and those are going to be the best trades for now. If you move in the middle, you're going to have to move from support to resistance to support to resistance.
Yeah, I'm a very picky oil trader. I don't trade it frequently, and I really, it really has to be something that lines up for me as well in my strategy. You have to have longer term lining up with shorter term. I just haven't had a lot of that lately in crude. So what is the level at the bottom that you're looking at, or all of a sudden you think that we could start seeing selling accelerate? Now, I know you talked about 43.50, but do you look at a weekly close below there? Does it have to breach it? And how much does it have to breach it by? And also same to the upside, where do you see points where all of a sudden we might have some interest to extend this range and get outside of this consolidation?
Okay, so my thought is if we close the week under 43.72, there's going to be more weak action that'll potentially send us down into about 41.40. If we close the week above 46.40 to 46.60, we're going to see an upward draft push us back into 47.70, maybe 48. But here's the wonderful thing. When you look at a weekly level, there are lots of opportunities that the market gives us to trade at those levels. We don't simply go, okay, lost that level, it must be short. You want to come down there, and as you look at that, it's sort of the same way I set up. You come in, and then you go to that 30-minute chart or the four-hour chart, depending on the time frame that you're looking to keep in the trade, and you say, wait a second, that has got a lot of downside pressure. So first pass bounce, probably going to fail, going to look for a short there on the bounce off of that level. If, however, it's got a lot of upside motion sitting around in terms of recovery and it fades all the way there, even if it pulls back, it tells us the undercurrent of value is still sitting there. Buyers are going to try and shove it up from underneath. That's why I like the Stochastic Momentum Index, because it builds that undercurrent, the flow of motion that lets us say, somebody's picking that up on the sly when it comes into this trough of support, and you can see it building with that technical momentum event. So anytime it comes into those levels, that's what I'll start looking for. But 4660, clearly the area that's going to give buyers more power, but it should retest. And as soon as it retests and holds that where you, that's where you platform from. And then 4370, in my mind, gives us a good enough close below that level. That should give us some fairly negative action, simply because we already are, from a weekly perspective, in a downside formation.
Okay, thanks. Good to know. Now, I want to talk about confirmations. Something that I've used in my trading over the years is watching when you have correlating markets. Let's talk about your weekly levels, hitting support or resistance at the same time, giving me confirmation to maybe trade that, trade a little bit bigger, or if we don't have confirmation in correlating markets, maybe trade it a little bit smaller. Easy example is if the Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P are all hitting weekly support or weekly resistance, is that triggering something to you to trade more aggressively? And if we have divergence like we've been seeing lately, does that trigger you to trade less aggressively?
Yeah. You know, I used to look at markets in tandem a lot, but I found that I had this terrible habit. I had this habit of focusing on the other market and then making the trade in the market that I am looking at, the instrument that I am looking at. And it ended up fattening my risk event. And so what I, interestingly, the Dow, the poor stepchild of the bunch, the little redheaded stepchild, the Dow, where a lot of folks go, hey, listen, I just look at the S&P. How can you look at the Dow when it's da-da-da-da-da, only 30 stocks? When I see the Dow holding strong and everything else looking weak, I will think to myself, you know what? I'm going to start looking at my chart and see it come into support, and I'm going to buy there. Because what I've noticed is this Dow has held so strong, even with all of the dips, all of the whatevers, it's held steady, and it's allowed me to say, you know, any deep dips I see in the ES, I am going to find a way to try and buy that support. And it has not failed me yet. Now, could it be that it is just a temporary relationship? Yes. But because I already know that I have a tendency to use the other chart too much, I will always come back to my first chart and say, wait a second, where is my support? Where is my resistance? I used to do that a lot with gold, because gold would move inversely to the market. But so much has changed. All of these relationships have shifted. And so we don't see moves like we used to see in times past, where we could count on a relationship between, you know, treasuries and the dollar all the time, or treasuries and gold all the time, or whatever. So I have a tendency not to do that in general, but if I do, it's looking at the Dow and watching how strong the dividend stocks stay. And that tells me that, listen, if those guys are strong, there's still space for us to move. And it's why I've been very, very hesitant to say, hey, listen, we're in a shorting mechanism here. We could be, but so far the Dow is not telling us that. And it's not led me incorrectly all year long. And so until the relationship breaks down, I'm going to keep staring it down, right? Because it's good until it isn't.
Yeah, I love the way you said that, because it's, for me, for years, I did a lot of relationship trading and it worked very well. And it still does. But the difference between then and now is that I do have to be, once again, like I talked about in crude, I'm a picky crude trader. I'm a pickier relationships trader. It's like they work until they don't. And then when they don't, you really can't be stubborn with it to say it's just not happening. And you have to be really quick to say, hey, this is just not working right now, and get off of it. And if it's a trade that you're in, you just got to learn to just take the loss and just move on, just like anything else, if you're leaning on that relationship. But I've learned over the years that when I see the indices, especially the indices, line up together with support or resistance is when we get the cleanest moves. And I've really been staying away from trading divergence markets because I feel that I'm not getting the follow through I like. But when they're all aligning up and you're seeing, let's just say for an easy example, 10-day moving average in the S&P and the Dow and the NASDAQ, if they all hit the 10-day moving average at the same time, typically we will have a response because you have three of them seeing it and testing at the same time. And that's when you get the move. And when you don't have that, when one's testing and the other one's not, it's usually a little bit bumpier. And I tend to say, you know, I might stay away from this, or I'm going to trade it smaller. I'm not trading off the 10-day moving average. I just use that as an example. But to visually give people the understanding of, like, when you see something occurring, whether it's a pattern or like you talk about on weekly support or weekly resistance or even looking at your stochastics or anything, when they're all showing the same thing, that's a relationship I found to be, okay, we should get a cleaner move here. I'll trade it more aggressively. When one is showing it and one is not, then I tend to be a little bit smaller or I just don't do it at all.
That makes a lot of sense because I look at that very same thing in terms of horizontal resistance. If they're both at a clear resistance level or they're both at a clear support level, I do tend to see them lifting dynamically together in tandem. So yeah, I'm going to investigate that a little bit more, but I have seen that a bit. I just didn't realize it was something that could amplify the motion.
Yeah, I mean, just I take it back to I trade the curve a lot, so I'll trade, and I'm not really spreading them, but I'm trading the outrights, the 10-year, the 30-year, and the 5-year, and I notice it a lot with them. If they're all hitting support at the same time using the same indicator, then typically they'll move pretty unison off of it. If when you have lately, like you've had a lot moving in the curve where you'll have the 30-year will be really strong or really weak versus the short end, then you typically have, you know, a choppier trade in all three of them. But when all three are going together, then you really see them hitting the same levels, hitting the same type of look at the same time, you get a really good response no matter which one you pick. So that's what I was saying. For years in the S&P, I've learned to evolve it to where I wait for that moment when I'm getting that similar look across the spectrum.
Very good.
Well, great stuff today, Emery. You know, it's always great to speak with you. Your insight is always just top notch, and you're such a good person to come on Futures Radio Show again and do this with me. So thank you, and enjoy the rest of your summer. And before I let you go, tell everybody once again where they could find you on Twitter and if you have a website that you'd like them to check out too.
Sure thing. And it's always a pleasure to be here. It's just great how you run these because they're just nice and clean and crisp, and I just like that. You can find me on Twitter at AnneMarie Trades or at thetradingbook.com. Thank you for asking about that, and good luck with the rest of your days. Enjoy the rest of that summer.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, AnneMarie, thanks a lot, and speak to you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Futures Radio Show. If you have any questions or comments for myself or my guests, please visit futuresradioshow.com and sign up to be a premium member for free. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes.